It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegebring. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Every child under the federal law who's been identified as having a disability is entitled to what the law calls a free, appropriate public education. And free and public and education, those are fairly easy words to understand, but appropriate is the word that gets everybody all tied up in knots. And how this is delivered is through an individualized education program, or in the special education world, an IEP, which is a plan that's supposed to lay out what the students' needs are, what the goals are to meet their needs, to make sure that they're making educational progress.
Attorney Andy Block from the Just Children Program talks about the rights of children with disabilities to special education, which is equal to that provided non-disabled students, in the second part of a two-part interview. And during this week's News You Can Use, we report on the Show Me the Note movement, which has helped thousands of homeowners stall or prevent foreclosure when they demanded their lenders produce the mortgage note and evidence that the homeowner was, in fact, notified each time the note was transferred. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 64, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR, 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. Before this program made its debut in June 2008, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society asked every radio station in the Richmond area if they would be willing to air it. Only WRIR was willing to broadcast the program. Only WRIR support keeps this program on the radio, and only your support keeps WRIR on the air with news, views, and music no one else will let you hear. Please call 622-9747 to make your gift or donate online at www.wrir.org to keep Law for the Rest of Us on Radio for the Rest of Us. Thank you. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Many homeowners are successfully delaying or even blocking foreclosures through the simple tactic of demanding that lenders produce the original mortgage note, which often is not so easy for them to do. A little-noticed legal provision requires lenders, if challenged, to prove they hold the original mortgage note before foreclosing. This has spawned a minor homeowner rebellion called Produce the Note or Show Me the Note. For homeowners trying to keep their homes, the tactic is one way to buy some time and maybe even get the upper hand on the lender because the fouled up paperwork and utter lack of legal compliance gives homeowners claims and defenses that strengthen their hands in negotiating mortgage modifications. It's still an uphill battle, especially in states like Virginia, where foreclosures don't have to go through court and homeowners have to sue in hopes of stopping foreclosure. Getting legal help early remains the best tactic. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a foreclosure case. In other news, last month, Virginia Organizing Project Executive Director Joe Sakos showed up to defend himself against trespassing charges in Henrico County General District Court. But the main witness for the prosecution, an employee of Anthem, failed to comply with a subpoena to be in court. the assistant Commonwealth attorney asked for and was given a continuance over the objection of Zaykos' attorney because their key witness was out of town, despite having been served the subpoena 7 weeks earlier. Zaykos was charged with trespassing on Anthem's property on July 24, when he and three other Virginia Organizing Project board members tried to meet with Anthem officials to discuss their concerns about a recent insurance premium increase and Anthem's use of insurance premiums in anti-health care reform lobbying. Zaykos does not understand why the Anthem employee who asked the police to arrest him had more important things to do than come to court, and observed that if he had not come to court, there would have been serious consequences. The case now is set for trial on November 23, 2009, at 1 p.m. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Ain't gonna let discrimination turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Gonna let discrimination turn me around. I'm gonna keep on walking, keep on talking, marching up to freedom. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is special education. Special education is the education of students with disabilities in a way that addresses students' individual differences and needs. The most common disabilities are specific learning disabilities, mental retardation, severe emotional disturbances, and other health impairments such as asthma, attention deficit disorder, or deafness. Children who are eligible for special education are entitled to a free, appropriate public education in the least restrictive environment. This is provided through an Individualized Education Program, or IEP, a legally enforceable document that includes all services needed for the child to benefit from education. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and special education is this week's legal term of the week.
I'm Marty Wegbright, host of the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. Legal education is legal empowerment and an essential part of the struggle for fairness, equality, and justice. Since 2005, WRIR has made programs like the Legal Aid Radio Show possible so you can hear what nobody else will broadcast. Whether it's unrepresented news, views, or music, WRIR is the only outlet for cultural diversity in Richmond, and you, our listeners, make it possible. Call 622-9747 to make your gift, or donate online at www.wrir.org to keep Law for the Rest of Us on Radio for the Rest of Us. Thank you. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. Last week, attorney Andy Block from the Just Children Program discussed the rights of children to basic educational opportunities and their legal protections when they face suspension or expulsion. We continue that discussion this week as Andy talks about the rights of children with disabilities to special education, which is equal to that provided non-disabled students, in the second part of a two-part interview. Now we'll be talking about special education. You mentioned that for the most part, if a child is removed from school, whether it's a long-term suspension or an expulsion, there's no clearly defined right to an education unless the child is in special education. So let's talk about special education, and I guess starting with the fundamental law that provides for special education, it's something called the Individuals with Disabilities in Education Act, or IDEA. What is this law all about?
It's a law that was created in the mid-70s. And just to sort of do a little bit of history around the law, after the case of Brown versus Board of Education, which probably everybody is familiar with, lawyers and families started looking at other groups of kids who were separated from the regular educational environment and started to argue on their behalf under the notion that separate is not equal, that they should be included in the regular education system as well. And so there were a couple of significant cases on behalf of children with disabilities where the courts found that they were being excluded and separated from school, and that was unconstitutional. It violated the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution. And so Congress passed a law in 1975 that is now known as you said, Marty, the Individuals with Disability Education Act, to protect the educational rights of students with disabilities.
And who is eligible for special education under IDEA?
The federal Congress and then the Department of Education have created a specific list of disabilities. And to be eligible for special education, the student has to be identified as having one of those disabilities and identified by the schools, I should say, as having one of those disabilities. And this, so that's the first requirement. And the second requirement is that that disability has an adverse impact, the law says, on a child's educational performance. So if you have a condition that constitutes a disability, but you're doing fine in school and it's not interfering with your education, the school system might say you're actually not eligible to receive special education.
Take us through the process. How is a child first identified as having a disability and possibly eligible for special education services?
Well, there are two ways. The law puts a requirement on local school systems to affirmatively identify every child with a disability who's in their school division. Unfortunately, that's not always what happens. And so the law also allows or contemplates that other people might bring children to the attention of the school and ask that they be identified.
And who would those other people be?
Well, the most important and likely person to do it would be a child's parent. But it's not limited to the parent. It could be a social worker, it could be a probation officer, it could be a lawyer or guardian ad litem who expresses in writing to the school that I'm working with this kid, and he's a couple of grades behind in school, or he has these other conditions. He's being diagnosed as having depression, whatever the situation is, and you ought to evaluate him for potential eligibility.
And what's the school's response supposed to be?
The school often convenes what's called a child study team to evaluate whether or not they should do an evaluation. In most instances, they do, although new provisions in the federal law also give them new ability to provide preliminary services and responses to see if whether or not a full evaluation is necessary. If the kid doesn't respond, then they can proceed with the process, although the interventions aren't supposed to be a substitute for an evaluation, more of a supplement to it. But presumably, the school will say, yes, we should evaluate your child. They then do comprehensive psychological, educational, and other kinds of testing on the child, and then everybody comes back for an eligibility meeting, at which time they look at the disability categories, they look at the educational impact, they look at the testing, and they decide whether or not the student's eligible for services.
Andy, let's assume that the school either doesn't do the evaluation or does the evaluation and this meeting is held and the parent just disagrees with the recommendation. What rights, if any, does the parent have?
Well, the law gives many rights to the parents. And one of the rights that parents have if they disagree with the evaluations of their child is to get an independent education evaluation paid for by the school. So if they disagree with what's happened, they can go identify a private provider or pick one from a list the school provides and basically get a second opinion. They also have the right to file an administrative challenge to a school's denial of appropriate educational services to their child. And that's called requesting a due process hearing. Now, just to be clear, due process hearing in the special education context has a specific meaning and it describes a specific kind of hearing. It's not the general due process that we talked about when we were talking about the school discipline cases.
Let's assume that a child has been identified as needing special education services of some type. What's the next step? What's the child entitled to?
Every child under the federal law who's been identified as having a disability is entitled to what the law calls a free, appropriate public education. and free and public and education, those are fairly easy words to understand, but appropriate is the word that gets everybody all tied up in knots. And how this is delivered is through an individualized education program, or in the special education world, an IEP, which is a plan that's supposed to lay out what the student's needs are, what the goals are to meet their needs, to make sure that they're making educational progress, and what services are necessary to meet those needs, and what kind of placement the student's going to be in to get the necessary services. One of the most important things, I think, for parents to remember is that the IEP is supposed to be individualized. And if they're at a meeting regarding their child and they hear school people say, well, this is what we do for kids who meet a certain criteria, that should not sound very individualized to the student. Another thing that's an important part of the special education system is that a fundamental notion of the law is that we want kids with disabilities to not be left behind and to be achieving as well as their peers and to meet the same expectations that other students have to meet. And so the law says that they're supposed to meet the same educational standards as other students. And so in Virginia, that means they need to be able to pass the standards of learning exams.
And another phrase that I've heard is that this is supposed to be done in the, quote, least restrictive environment. What does that mean?
Well, going back to the whole idea that separate is not equal, one of the important goals of the law was to make sure that children with disabilities were not separated from children who didn't have disabilities. And so the least restrictive environment means that children should be educated in a setting to the maximum extent possible with kids who don't have disabilities. And there are two benefits to that. One is for the children with disabilities to be in what people call a mainstream environment and to have a diverse array of peers and people achieving at different levels. But the second benefit that people don't think of so much is for the kids who don't have disabilities and for them to learn to live with and be in a world with people of all different abilities and backgrounds and makeups and talents and gifts and challenges. And I think there are benefits for both groups and very strong benefits for both groups.
Earlier, you mentioned the, quote, due process hearing. If a parent disagrees with the school decision, whether the child is eligible or not, and whether a particular service should or shouldn't be provided, take us briefly through that due process hearing. What happens?
So if a parent and a school system have a fundamental disagreement about, say, the appropriateness of a program, the parent wants one thing, the school won't provide it, the parent requests a due process hearing, and there are two things that happen. One is, under the current law, mediation is offered as sort of a first step. And it's not mandatory, but it's offered as a first step. And parents and schools can enter mediation with an outside mediator and hopefully achieve resolution that way. If that doesn't work, or if the parties opt not to participate in it, then there's a hearing in front of an administrative law judge or administrative hearing officer who's a lawyer who's trained to serve as a judge for these hearings. The hearings aren't in courtrooms. They're often in conference rooms or meeting rooms around a table. But there are court reporters. There are opening and closing statements. You do introduce evidence. You put on witnesses. You cross-examine the other party's witnesses. So it has many of the features of a trial, but in some technical ways and also in the setting, is also different than a trial.
And is that appealable to court?
That then is appealable to either a circuit court in the state of, in the Commonwealth of Virginia, or to a federal district court.
And now, to bring the interview sort of full circle, you mentioned earlier that a student who is long-term suspended or expelled, there's really no right to educational services, but that's different for special education children. Would you explain briefly how students who are special education students who have been identified with disabilities have to be disciplined?
Well, so the whole goal of the law is to make sure that children are not excluded from school because of their disabilities. And so the law has protections to make sure that kids whose behavior is connected to their disability are not put out of school. And kids who have disabilities who get in trouble that's not connected to their behavior but who still have disabilities can continue to receive education. So going back to the example of the kid who punched another kid in the nose in the cafeteria, if he's a child who receives special education services, the school has a meeting. It's called a manifestation determination meeting to determine whether or not Johnny's disability caused him essentially to engage in that behavior. If it did, Johnny stays in school. If it didn't, then they can discipline him or remove him from that setting, but they still have to provide him with a free, appropriate public education in a different setting. There's a couple of things to think about. You only have the manifestation meeting if the principal is recommending that Johnny be put out for more than 10 days. And so the principal is basically the CEO of that building. And the manifestation team is made up of his employees, and for the most part. And so I worry sometimes that folks don't want to upset their boss and make a finding that would reverse his decision. The other thing that often happens is, because much more often than not, schools find it's not a manifestation of a child's disability, they then have to educate them elsewhere. And what happens all too often is that children are put on homebound education, where they get 4 hours or 6 hours or 8 hours or 10 hours, which is the most restrictive educational setting, not the least restrictive, which often doesn't help accomplish the socialization goals. It often doesn't provide them with the other services they need, but that's what schools do. In the city of Richmond, actually, we ended up having seen a huge number of cases of kids who got put on homebound inappropriately, of sort of challenging the city school system and ultimately working with them cooperatively to require them to provide a whole nother array of placements so that fewer and fewer kids are getting sent home.
And I guess your message would be get help, get it early, get it often. How would someone do that?
I think if you are worried that your child's not performing how they ought to be in school, you ought to ask the schools potentially to do an evaluation and get more information and see what's going on. And try to get involved in your children's education and get the schools paying attention to them as soon as possible. It's much harder to help a 16-year-old who's in seventh grade than it is to help an 8-year-old who's in third grade or a 6-year-old who's in first grade. And so don't wait. Get on it early, because when kids get held back, the older the kids get, the harder it is to turn the ship around. The other thing is that if you live in the Richmond area, if you have concerns about the services your child's getting in school, you know, you should feel free to call us. And the Just Children program is part of the Legal Aid Justice Center, which has an office in Richmond. We're in the old Schwarzschild Jewelry Building on the corner of Broad and Second. So you can stop by, or you can call 804-643-1086 and ask to get some help.
Thank you very much. We have been talking with Andy Block, who is the director of the Just Children program in Charlottesville, Virginia. Thank you so much for being on the show, Andy.
Thanks for having me, Marty.
I'm Marty Wegbright, host of the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. Remember when radio used to be real people spinning real records? Remember when news and talk programs used to be insightful and relevant? We at WRIR do too. WRIR DJs hand select the music they play each week. WRIR also features locally produced news and talk covering local, national, and international stories. We are Richmond Independent Radio, radio for the rest of us. And you, our listeners, make it possible. Call 622-9747 to make your gift, or donate online at www.wrir.org. Thank you. That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This radio station, WRIR, provides programming you can't get anywhere else. If you can't afford to contribute, listen for free. If you can afford to contribute in any amount, please call 622-9747 to make your gift or donate online at www.wrir.org to keep Law for the Rest of Us on Radio for the Rest of Us. Virginia's motor vehicle lemon law is one of the best in the nation. But how much do you know about it, and what would you do if you got stuck with a lemon? And if consumer activist Ralph Nader got to pick a cabinet position, which one would he choose? His answer may surprise you. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when we feature interviews with private attorney John Gale about the lemon law and with consumer activist Ralph Nader in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard on August 27, 2008. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.